Welcome back to Cathedra Antonio Rosmini. In our last video lesson, we examined the concept of civil society in Hegel, in its general idea, and with both that from Hegel come out two diverse concepts. And we already mentioned that Rosmini took one of both and Gramsci the other. In this recent video lesson, we want to analyze both concepts more deeply. First of all, Gramsci and then Rosmini, and we will close with some final remarks. Contrarily to Karl Marx, Antonio Gramsci excluded the market dimension from civil society and reinterpreted the latter one in an Hegelian sense as the place where social consensus is realized. Contrary to Marx, for Gramsci, civil society brings to social consensus. For Gramsci, indeed, civil society is situated between the economic structure and the state. With its legislation and coercion stands civil society. It is the ensemble of organisms commonly called private, where is realized the political and cultural hegemony of a social group in the entire society as the ethical contents of the state. Already through these definitions results clear that civil society is not the system of needs, as in Hegel and then in the beginning of Marx's theory, but the sum of all institutions which rule the economic processes in order to manufacture consent and legitimacy. This idea that hegemony is realized through the sum of all institutions which form civil society has its roots in the biographical horizon of Gramsci. He was born in Sardinia in 1891, where the Italian state was 30 years old. He experienced the slow transformation processes of a society which was intensively ruled by customs, traditional ideas of social and family, and the high influence of church. He realized that in the Italian society, as well as in Western societies generally, a political revolution, as it happened in Russia in 1917, would never be possible for the reason of the existence of a strong civil society. Therefore, he substituted the idea of revolution by hegemony, which is more able to theorize a cultural and political transformation process of an articulated civil society. This idea showed its efficacy, also considering the political situation of Italy on the beginning of the 20th century, called the moment of transformismo, which meant the overcoming of political conflicts in a great coalition of government. For Gramsci, in this way, consensus killed the conflicts of the diverse parties, which determined the struggles during the Italian unification Risorgimento. Gramsci finished in prison under Mussolini in 1928 and could write his political thoughts only on notebooks, which were censored, for he avoided clear revolutionary language. In 33 notebooks, he wrote about 3,000 pages. In 1935, he was transferred to a hospital in Rome because of his illness. There he died in 1937. The difference between Gramsci's and Marx's thought is the twofold primacy of ideological superstructure over the economic structure. For Marx, the economic is the real structure, while the political structure is the overstructure, the superstructure. For Gramsci, there is over the economy the together of all the social institutions. This is civil society, which is in a certain way the superstructure on political society. And in this conception, we realize the central dimension and importance of this concept in Gramsci. This means for Gramsci, the realization of the supremacy of civil society implies several institutions: church, schools, trade unions, but also sport teams and others. All institutions which are means for the dominant class that realizes its sovereignty. Since civil society defines, therefore, all everyday action in society, which implicitly are expressions of a worldview, also children's parties, shopping trips, and going on holiday, all these dimensions of everyday life is an expression of a determined worldview for Gramsci. And this worldview is influenced by all the institutions of civil society. The exercise of power through civil society has become a pervasive dimension, and it is even difficult to individuate exactly the degree and measure of manipulation. Self-government of the individual and political society stands in an organic complement. Civil society therefore implicitly acknowledges that there are issues in circulation other than that of class. Whereas for some earlier versions of the concept, civil society is only useful in sustaining an unequal concept of society, Gramsci argues that a complex and well-articulated civil society would be necessary even after a major upheaval. Through these institutions, the dominant class, according to Gramsci, fosters its cultural and spiritual supremacy. Of course, behind this theory stands Gramsci's idea of the individual. Not the individual stands in the center of his considerations, but his capacity of being a historical agent. Any individual is what he is because of his actions and interactions with the social context. Everyone is creating his or her own life. And the constitutive social context of every individual is that of public struggle. For Gramsci, real unity as a potential result of the will to overcome the existing historically produced antagonistic social unity. This means also that a political unity can exist only when it involves all the groups and different elements which are present in its civil society. In other words, his project is the continuous attempt to transform communist politics into an ethics of the collective. Since revolution cannot take place in Europe, Gramsci says that the communist ideology has to transform all the civil institutions. Only if we transform civil society, all the institutions, then communist revolution can have the hope to win one day. Because it is not enough to win some determined, let's say, social context or institution here or there, when the everyday life continues to be influenced by hegemonic ideologies, which in this case is the capitalistic ideology. This is a continuous task for the hegemonic will to create the social consensus. Who has the hegemonic will? The hegemonic will has to create in every time social consensuses. And this situation is not fixed once for all. And this creation of social consensuses is realized through the institutions. Indeed, the hegemonic will must assure the constancy of his own hegemony by recreating through itself. But even if hegemonic will is constructed through consensus, this construction has an antagonistic and quite militant character. The organs of civil society are like the trench systems of modern welfare. In a war, it would sometimes happen that a fierce artillery attack seemed to have destroyed the enemy's entire defensive system, whereas in fact it had only destroyed the outer perimeter, and at the moment of their advance and attack, the assailants would find themselves confronted by a line of defense which was still efficacious. The same things happen in politics, said Gramsci. Civil society is definitively not the sphere of voluntary associations and private harmony, but of struggle of ideas and reciprocal contestations. The historical unity, says Gramsci, of the ruling class is realized in the state, and their history is essentially history of states. But it would be wrong to think that this unity is simply juridical and political. The fundamental historical unity concretely results from the organic relations between state and political society and civil society. This was a quotation of Gramsci. Therefore, his idea of civil society is significantly ambiguous because of, on the one hand, it is an expression of the hegemonic forces of the state, but on the other hand, also the creative place of formation of counter-hegemonic forces. And here is the way to get on a social, let's say, on a position of hegemony. We have to form, says Gramsci, as a counter-hegemonic force and then become hegemonic force. Or concretely, where capitalistic societies has its social groups which continue hegemony in managers, social workers, educated, etc., why the counter-hegemony would be formed by the working class. But the central point is that for Gramsci it is more important for the ruling class to acquire a hegemonic position than controlling the government with its brute force. His idea of civil society is, in fact, that not by force, but by universal consent of the hegemonic political ideas, political power can be reached and constantly assured. Political power is assured better and, in a way, more sustainably by consensuses, not by force. Of course, political society is using force to impose its ideas, its hegemonic ideas. But the idea of civil society is that these ideas are every day, in everyday life, reproduced because it is formed by the universal consent. His idea of civil society is that not by force, but by universal consent on the hegemonic political ideas, political power can be reached and constantly assured. This is a much more better assurance for political power than not that by force. The idea of transformismo is indeed the theory that explains the process whereby the hegemonic groups absorbed, translated and articulated the demands of some of the dominated sectors, the better to diffuse them. Therefore, for Gramsci, hegemony is the central word of civil society for creating a common will and a united political subject. In this hegemonic situation, peaceful coexistence and civility is realizable. In his Marxist revolutionary language, Gramsci calls them hegemony, which is for him another concept for consent. Gramsci goes beyond Hegel because he sees these structures not as objective, but as results of subjective wills. Now, Gramsci distinguishes private hegemony, which characterizes the civil society, from the state dimension, which is characterized by coercive force and repressive mechanisms of domination. Therefore, it was stressed that it is possible to say that the author of the notebooks introduced the question of contract or intersubjectivity as at the center of his Marxist theory of the state and of politics. This is one interpreter of Gramsci, which focuses here on the interesting idea that Gramsci introduces with the concept of civil society in a Marxist ideology, the dimension of interpersonality, of intersubjectivity. This is very, very important. In his utopian vision, he conceives a growing identification of this hegemonic dynamics of civil society with the state, in a way that in future every state organization would be superfluous and the totally politicized civil society would take its place. For Gramsci, it is the step towards the utopia of a civil society or state without state. It is possible to imagine, says Gramsci, the coercive element of the state withering away by degrees, and even more conspicuous elements of regulated society or ethical state or civil society make their appearance. In the doctrine of the state becoming regulated society, between a phase in which state will be equal to government and one in which state will be identified with civil society, we will have to pass through a phase of the night watchman state, so a fading away of the state by identifying himself with civil society. For Gramsci, the social dynamic of civil society is therefore the equilibrium which results from the hegemonic groups within a society. The problem of power in the public sphere is an ongoing process through a constantly circulating and shifting network of influences. In his communist view, the working class should build a concrete counter-hegemony through associations and parties of workers and cultural associations for the divulgence of the proletarian ideals, for the challenge of the culturally hegemonic capitalistic worldview. As someone showed, this Gramscian shift of Marxist thought means also a radical new epistemological concept. Not the cause and effect relationships of economic explanation produces historical truth, as in Marx, but the complex consideration of the interdependence of historic events and the infinite play of difference within the struggle for hegemony. If Hegel realized that the atomic system create particular collective interests which express themselves in corporations, Gramsci in turn realized that groups and social classes, in the process of organizing themselves and struggling for their own interests, create private hegemony apparatuses. Gramsci takes from Hegel the positive idea that the private wills in the realm of economic relationships tend beyond the mere dimension of private interest and towards relatively stable, non-individual social structures, which in Hegelian terms are called ethical, because they create the conciliation of liberty in consensuses. For Gramsci, this is the transformation from private will into the dimension of public sphere and in the end of the state. In this way, the citizens give their acceptance to the state, and in this consists the central concept of European modern political thought, that any political sovereignty can be ethically justified only by consensus. Here is the ethical dimension in Gramsci. Consensus justifies political hegemony. Gramsci's concept is a theory of continuous enlargement of consensus, which build more and more the civil society, which is thus identified with a universalized dimension. In other words, through civil society, politics should be continuously transformed into ethics. For this process, the role of intellectuals is crucial, because they have the capacity to find and represent the innovative moments within the rising class. But for Gramsci, these intellectuals must be able to participate at the class struggle. Mere wisdom, which is not political, would not serve in his eyes. Those traditional intellectuals which are unpolitical are not able to form the masses. Indeed, for Gramsci, the civil society is a theory not for individuals or traditional intellectuals, but for mass societies. He is interested in theorizing how political and hegemonic strategies function in modern mass societies, in which individuals organize themselves through logics of aggregations and massification. Indeed, the Italian cultural context in which Gramsci grew up was signed by the wide number of corporations and organizations of the new mass society. For the state organizations, these groups are indeed a challenge. For Gramsci, these developments bring the liberal order to its very crisis, in the measure in which it does not take the society. In other words, the society developments guide Italy at the end of the 19th century to a legitimation crisis with new difficulties for the government. He theorized a possibility to include these realities in the theory of political hegemony and revolutionary thought. The civil society is therefore the place of struggle and fights, on which participate at the concrete actors in it. And through the political sphere, the consensus is in it also assured by force. Every of both spheres absorbs in the end the other. Only the utopian identification of the political sphere with civil society makes this force superfluous. After these considerations on the Gramscian concept, let's pass to the idea of Antonio Rosmini. Antonio Rosmini presents a complete opposite view on what civil society could and should be. Already his biography indicates us a complete different person. Born in 1797 in northern Italy, which was under Austrian control, he becomes a priest and one of the most influent Catholic liberal intellectuals in the 19th century Italy. He wrote two fundamental works on the reform of society and church, and was engaged in the political unification process of Italian Risorgimento. As well as Gramsci, his ideas on society brought him in conflict with the hegemonic institutions, in this case with the church. Not only the two reform writings were officially prohibited, but his entire thought was condemned by the church 33 years after his death in 1888. Only in 2001 his thought was readmitted. Just from this biography, it is clear that Rosmini had a very, very diverse view on the problem of civil society, and his view would be indeed not suitable for a comparison with Gramsci, if it would not be possible to comprehend it as a second way to react to the Hegelian concept. So a direct comparison between Rosmini and Gramsci would be methodologically very, very problematic, of course, because we have no direct, direct references, neither references from Rosmini to Gramsci, of course, but nor from Gramsci to Rosmini. We have such a different thought, such different categories. The only way to put both together, to kind of compare Gramsci and Rosmini, is to see them at a reaction to the Hegelian concept of civil society, that Rosmini takes the one aspect and Gramsci the other one, and to see how both react to Hegel. And there are some interesting points in common and some interesting differences on how they react to Hegel. And so both contrary concepts become in a certain way suitable for a comparison, which has to point out, of course, the differences, but can also show some interesting points in common. In other words, through their common reaction to Hegel and their references to this concept of civil society, it is in a certain way possible to put them one next to the other in order to elaborate their different views. Indeed, beyond Hegel, Rosmini was fascinated not so much by Marx, but by the British and Scottish thinkers of civil society, and even more by Alexis de Tocqueville. For him, the civil society is a concept from the bottom, which focuses the recognition of free individuality of each person, as works as an education to citizenship. So the civil society for Rosmini is a liberal and pluralistic association of free and self-determined individuals. And Rosmini says, we also bind and unite persons to ourselves and ourselves to them. But this union proper to persons differs entirely from our union with things. We do not consider persons as advantageous for ourselves. In this case, they would be the same as things, but as people in whose company we can enjoy the advantages offered by things. Persons united in this way acquire a communion in good, and together form a single end. Things are only a means to the end, which all persons have in common. This is a bond of society. Rosmini thinks of the bond of society, which is a bond between individuals. He begins with individuals, as we see, not with institutions of civil society and their hegemonic ideological function, as in Gramsci. One important consequence of this, which does honor to human society, is that a moral element is present in the very essence of society. Because the constitutive principle of moral virtue is also, generally speaking, the constitutive principle of society. The principle of moral virtue, simply stated, is, says Rosmini, respect person as end. Do not use person as a means for yourself, the Kantian imperative. The object of virtue, therefore, is always the dignity of the person, and here precisely lies the origin of human association. End of the Rosminian quotation. Since only in civil society people can pursue their satisfaction, for Rosmini, feudalism and state absolutism are two political forms which have to be refused. The civil associations between people for realizing their goals are not the vehicles for hegemony, but the way in which the modern individuals find together and organize themselves also in order to protect themselves in a better way. This is a complete different way on the sense of civil society, which we have in Rosmini respect to Gramsci. Therefore, Rosmini is convinced that the more societies grow and the interpersonal relationships flourish, the more people will be able to define the basic principles of justice, right, and civil government. People find the principles of justice and government not in moral reflection where they have to be constrained to come to. Yeah, philosophers, intellectuals reflect on it, this is clear. But by growing, but by living together, Rosmini says that every society begins with egoistic tendencies, with rough traditions, in some way with not developed moral principles, but they become developed by developing of society. When people live together, when society grows, then this principle becomes more and more clear. He has this interest idea of in civilization that societies are in a process of become every times more civil. And then, of course, societies can also break down, can also dissolve, yes, when these principles are not anymore in the consciousness of institutions and peoples. Yeah, this is clear. But the dynamics of society is first of all the dynamics of individuals as persons, as we saw. Rosmini says, we are certainly not keen on centralization, but neither do we maintain that the government should dissolve into an endless number of tiny republics, as happened during medieval times. Rosmini is in this way a convinced thinker of Italian Risorgimento. When society grows, there we discover eternal principles of society. Central government should be strong, and at the same time those governed must enjoy the greatest of freedom. To distinguish between what belongs to the strength of the government and not to the freedom of those governed, from what belongs to the freedom of those governed and not to the strength of the government. Not to surrender any of this and not to usurp any of that. This is one of the main and most difficult issues of political wisdom. End of the quotation. For Rosmini, the aim of government is not to produce a common will through hegemony, but to recognize the freedom of the people, which is expressed in their individual rights. This right is not something definable by government, but it is the human person itself, which is in this sense outside of the society. Of course, individuals are in society, but the value of every individual is outside of society. Society cannot determine the value of an individual. Individual has its value a priori. The mistake of those who exaggerate social rights into the destruction of extra social right inevitably produces absolutism, says Rosmini. Just as the mistake of those who exaggerate extra social right to the destruction of social right inevitably produces ultra liberalism and anarchy. Rosmini searches a way between anarchy on the one side and absolutism on the other side. So people are bound together by society, but they have pre-social values, they have pre-social rights. Rosmini defines indeed the right of the human person, the right which the human person is as pre-social right, which has to be guaranteed as an independent political tribunal. For Rosmini, through this institution, justice becomes precedent to politics. With other words, civil society means for Rosmini the independence of human justice from politics and governments. This is the first aim of Rosmini, to stabilize justice in an independent way from politics. While in Gramsci's perspective, both spheres absorb each other. We saw in Gramsci that civil society as the ethical dimension of all becomes every time more identified with the state. The state, we said, fade out and identifies itself more and more with civil society. The more ethic becomes civil society. For Rosmini, the ethic aspect of civil society, the justice aspect of civil society, has to be assured every time by an institution which is outside of civil society, outside of the political real. Through the independent protection of human person, which is the independent form from government, Rosmini's fundamental conviction becomes realized that the human person is the essence of every right. And he says in his philosophy of right, the famous definition, precision requires that we say the human person is subsistent human right. One of the most important definitions of what is human right. Rosmini says the human person is subsistent human right. The human right is the person. This is Rosmini's anthropology of right. It follows that the person is the essence of right. It follows from our definition of right that personship is of the essence of right. Of its essence, person has all the elements that form the definition of right, said Rosmini. Therefore, the duty of government and the state can only be to define the modality of rights. Not, they cannot define the right. They can define the modality of rights, but not its essence or substance. If government would aim to rule the essence of rights, it would destroy freedom and act against human dignity. Therefore, it becomes immediately clear that Rosmini, as well as Gramsci, was against the identification of society with economic relationships. Also, Rosmini recognizes higher values which should be realized in it. Whatever importance is given to economic matters, it will never be true that the apex of human association consists in economy, said Rosmini. This idea of society and the difference of social and pre-social rights, the idea that society can rule only the modality of rights, and that therefore the economic relationships and the subjective interests are articulated only on the superficial side of society, is an anthropological conviction. Rosmini knew very clearly that the way in which we conceive civil society depends in the end of the day on the way in which we see the human person. Human beings, the basic element of society, are made up of two parts, one internal and invisible, and other external and visible, says Rosmini. Similarly, they are two parts of every human society, the invisible and the visible, the internal and the external part. If the external material part of society does not reflect something internal and spiritual, the society's appearance is only a chimera. It cannot last. The corporeal external part of society must be considered the means for perfecting the internal spiritual part, where, properly speaking, the human being exists. End of the quotation. For Rosmini, in society, it is not enough to think on economic relationships and utilitarian strategies. Society is a dimension of social recognition, not only the state. Thus, it is important that Rosmini does not identify society with struggle, but with recognition. Right is for Rosmini the social dimension of recognition. I can become a person only in interpersonal relationships. But the condition is to recognize everyone as a person. In this perspective, the right becomes the means of social bonds. The constitution and the fundamental rights have, in the Rosminian thought, precisely this function, to make possible the rise of civil society as a necessary dimension for the realization of human beings. In this direction, for Rosmini, the social dimension of the absolute is important. Why the other has an absolute claim for recognition? According to Rosmini, the religious dimension of every human being, religious not in the sense of a certain religious creed, but as the relationship to something absolute which every person has, is in the end of the day the important way to understand the dimension of right. I have to recognize the other in an absolute way, because he realizes an absolute dimension. If I recognize that everyone is capable of something absolute, according to which he defines his life and makes his decisions, which is that absolute for everyone, everyone has to decide it and has to choose it in his conscience, then these decisions merit absolute respect. I can be really human if I recognize everyone as an absolute, with absolute ideas, decisions and ideals. This makes, according to Rosmini, of the whole mankind a huge society, these relationships of interpersonal and universal recognition. of independent relationships, of relationships which put together all people in a universal society of human beings. This makes, according to Rosmini, of the whole mankind a huge society which never ends. Rosmini proposes the view of a universal society of human mankind, and this is for him represented in the religious society. The church is the visible representation of this invisible universe society of human mankind. And this visible church, Rosmini calls with an ancient term, theocratic society. Rosmini uses often medieval terms, even if his theory is very modern. In this way, he tries to actualize, to bring into modernity medieval concepts, and to explain to modernity the sense of these concepts, and in this synthesis, to bring to modernity also new ideas, new perspectives. Even an atheist is someone characterized by something absolute, because he is living his life according to an absolute conscience, which claims full recognition. Rosmini identifies this dimension in the anthropological characteristics of truth, virtue, and happiness, and he says, truth is inherent to human beings and informs them. Virtue is the perfection of the human person. Happiness is the perfect state to which man's essential feeling tends incessantly. In this way, over the limited political civil society as the union of families or of all citizens, Rosmini thinks about a universal civil society as the union of families or of all citizens. But like the family, this is not a political dimension. The real recognition is not produced by politics, but is invisible a priori to it. Civil society is therefore a twofold proposition. It has a twofold proposition. On the family reality on the one side and on the universal human mankind on the other. In this way, civil society is again in the middle between family and human mankind. The other belongs first to nature or the absolute and to his family and only then to society. Society is, of course, the necessary dimension that family does not become egoistic and nature, mankind, becomes concrete and visible, even through the conflict of interests, the economic competition, and the combat of ideas. Civil society is important. Otherwise, families would become only egoistic, this dimension which feared Hegel, this is also in Rosmini. And on the other hand, human universal mankind becomes never visible, becomes never concrete. So civil society is the important instance of concretization of both family and universal human mankind. And here is its importance. The absolute recognition of the other, which is realized in universal mankind and family, becomes concrete, becomes possible, in other words, only through civil society. And Rosmini says, every other society formed by human mankind is therefore guilty and evil if it does not respect the primal human society and acknowledges its laws as inviolable. In the end, universal theocratic society is the expression that religious has the political dimension to favor that universal love which has to be the horizon of the right of every other society, the familiar and the civil one. The universal society of human mankind is the universal horizon for all, for civil society, but also for family. And Rosmini says, a particular society's love for its members may not detract from or restrict universal love for all men. On the contrary, it must further it. All love of family, country, or any other society whatsoever is to be founded in common love, and it is to be at the service of the universal love of human embracing every human individual. For Rosmini, keeping this dimension every time alive, this is the duty of every religion. So every religion has to work together, also atheists, all together has to work in the universal society of human mankind to promote this universal love. Rosmini's political thought is therefore radically anti-perfectivistic. The political sphere cannot become total. Indeed, Rosmini gives an important definition of political anti-perfectivism, which means the demonstration that it is impossible to realize politically an idea of human perfection. And Rosmini says, perfectionism, the system which believes in the possibility of perfection in human affairs and sacrifices present benefits for some imagined future perfection, is an effect of ignorance. It consists in overweening prejudice that prompts too favorable a judgment about human nature, which it examines on the basis of pure hypothesis, of a postulate that cannot be granted, and which absolute lack of reflection on the natural limits of things. Elsewhere, I spoke about the great principle of the limitation of things, and I showed that there is some good whose existence would be altogether impossible without the existence of some evil. End of the quotation. This means that in difference to Gramsci, for Rosmini, no political utopia can have the reason to exist. No political society, no civil society can be identified with the universal society, can become perfect society. Political society is always characterized by the limitation of things, said Rosmini. And the perspective of universal love, of universal human solidarity, this perspective of universal society is only an ideal perspective. Kant would say it is a regulative idea, a regulative idea. It can never become real. We can never have a universal society of all human mankind, which in the end would be also totalitarian if it would be political. Therefore, for Rosmini, it is impossible. It is important that church represents it. Church represents it. But also, church is not the concrete universal society of mankind. It makes it visible. And therefore, church is, for Rosmini, in a certain antagonism to civil society. While for Gramsci, it is part of civil society. In Rosmini, it is always in antagonism to it, because civil society, as political society, cannot become the whole. Here is the limitation of things. Church, the presence of church in society, is important as an antagonistic element, not as an element within the hegemonic structure of society. And as this antagonistic element, it limitates, it is a principle of limitation of political reality. Political limiter is limited because human being is limited, and only by religion and only by universal horizon mankind comes over that limitation. But this overcoming this limitation is not even more a political dimension. It cannot be a political dimension. It is, for Rosmini, a religious dimension. This is why, for Rosmini, the first political aim is not producing hegemony, but assuring freedom through rights. Only in this way, this anti-perfectivism in Rosmini says that we cannot produce the perfect political ideology. The duty of the political system is to ensure rights. Only in this way he is not obligated to identify all types of society with the civil one. With family and church, there are two other forms of society where humanity is realized in a natural and in a religious way. I cannot omit the right of the society, says Rosmini, which mankind makes between itself and God, theocratic society, nor that of domestic society, or that of civil society. All three of these special or particular societies are found wherever mankind is sufficiently extended and developed. Without the aid of these societies, the human race could never progress towards the attainment of its own moral perfection, which is fittingly called humanity. End of quotation. In other words, if we do not recognize that there are two dimensions of human person which are outside of society, the absolute and the natural dimension, then it becomes a clear consequence that civil society becomes identified with the whole reality of human person. Then, in the consequence, every dimension of human life becomes political and object of hegemony. The relativeness of civil society is expressed in a very traditional way. Rosmini says, civil society is a union of families, of fathers of families. In the state of nature, one family, although independent of all others, can be in conflict with them because of uncertain rights, or by damaged by them, or even helped and advantaged. Civil society is then gradually formed in order to regulate these divergences. It is an institution with tends to provide peaceful cohabitation among several families without harm or to any and to the advantage of all. End of the quotation. Here it becomes clear how Rosmini intends civil society as the pure associational element based on rights, but he retains the concrete state necessary for their concrete realization. And here he differentiates between civil society, state, and power. Every of three elements cannot be confused with the other. He says we shall call state civil societies as they actually exist, with all the seigneurial elements which to a greater or lesser extent they retain in their constitution. When these states are considered in their relationships with others, we shall call them powers. We shall restrict the name civil society to the true proper meaning of the words, that is to pure society, abstracting from every seigneurial element. This element does not form part of the essence of societies, as we have seen. Its nature is the opposite of that power to the social element. For Hegel and Gramsci, all the associations are civil ones. And indeed, we saw that in Hegel, civil society arises through the negation of family and brings in the end to the organic integration of the individual into the state. For Gramsci, the individualism of Bourdieu's civil society is dangerous, and he saw in Marx the backlash to politicize the human being totally. Only if civil society absorbs the political society, the universal conscience, and therefore the ethical existence of the individual is realized. In Rosmini, we have definitively a concept with which impedes the politicization of civil society. It is not becoming a political domination, but has to recognize natural and religious spaces of freedom. Therefore, human being can realize his freedom aiming to other goals which are not necessarily political or economic ones. For Rosmini, the most important dimension of interpersonal relationship is the reciprocal recognition. This term, which as well as civil society comes from Hegel, is a fundamental anthropological exigency. Every individual seeks recognition by others, and Rosmini was well aware that this recognition cannot be produced neither by the state, neither by the market. Both presuppose strong individuals, and only when individuals are strong, state and economy can work. But the deepest resource of strong individuals, namely the recognition, cannot be produced or assured by institutions, because it is a moral dimension. Only free individuals can recognize others, and every moment of recognition is a free action in which humanity realizes itself. Therefore, it was clear for Rosmini that state and economy needs these pre-social relation structures in which individuality is embedded or concretely realized. In these structures, his or her freedom is not egologic or individualistic, but constitutively reciprocal and involves relationship. Where Gramsci identified all human societies with the civil one and politicized it, theorizing the whole human life as an object of political struggle and as a means for hegemony, in Rosmini there are dimensions of human life which cannot be identified with the political dimension, and these dimensions are important for the social recognition of every person. So let me come to the end. With both Antonio, Rosmini and Gramsci, the Italian political thought contributed to the theory of civil society in both meanings: individual freedom and solidarity participation. Against the Marxist view in Gramsci, where the solidarity consensus is produced by hegemonic strategies, Rosmini stresses the importance of freedom and individual right for the realization of human being. Rosmini's view on civil society is not communitaristic, but personalistic, and gives an important contribution to political thought. That the idea of political society should never be made absolute, but consider the natural and religious dimensions of human person. While the economic sphere can be exploited for political goals, the natural dimension of family and the religious beliefs have an important institutional importance through relativizing state and government. Nowadays, when we focus on the dimension of civil society, we face the challenge of a growing global civil society. On the one hand, a global society must be based on the concept of rights and of the dignity of every single human individual. But this concept can be misunderstood very easily as a pure market-oriented concept. Global civil society has to be definitively more. The dimensions of responsibility and solidarity cannot be realized only by market structures, but has to be produced also by the international organizations and movements, and demonstrates that the World Peace Project is not something created by the states, but rather a product of concrete engagement and relationships between the people. In Gramsci and Rosmini, we consider two very distinct and opposite ways to think civil societies. But for both, civil society is the very place to reform society, and both give us an important consideration and important dimension for constructing this civil global society. For Gramsci in a communist sense, for Rosmini in a liberal one. Both wanted to impede the Hegelian consequence that the civil existence of people can be assured organically only in the state. They faced in the state the problem that it not considers the centrality of civil society and the dynamics of modern masses. Where Hegel absorbed family in civil society and civil society in the state, Gramsci totalizes civil society and identified all the private and civil associations with it. In this way, he totalizes the political dimension of it until it becomes the utopian dimension of substituting the political state by the last universal and totalitarian hegemonic consensus. For Rosmini, civil society is only one of the three society which characterize the social dimension of human being. And it is subsidiary to the other two. The most inner beliefs and the private and communitarian relationships have to be outside of it. The necessary dimension of communion is not produced by the state, as in Hegel, nor by civil society, as in Gramsci, but by pre-political societies. Where for Gramsci, the state is exercised in civil society and through it, excluding therefore the market from civil society, Rosmini distinguishes this concept from the state, which should not intervene in its dynamics, which are primarily formed by rights, but also by free market relationships. I think this could be a synthesis of our analyze of the relationship between Hegel, Rosmini and Gramsci on the idea of civil society. And we hope to have risen some ideas, some new ideas, some ideas on how we can develop our ideas on civil society for a new future of European and global civil society. Thank you so much for your attention.